Blind Spot: Hidden Biases of Good People. Authors: Mazarin R. Banaji and Anthony G. Greenwald. Hidden Biases. Bits of knowledge about social groups are stored in our brain because we encounter them so frequently in our cultural environment. Once lodged into our minds, hidden biases can influence our behavior toward members of particular social groups, but we remain oblivious to their influence. People find it unbelievable that their behavior can be guided by mental content of which they are unaware. Visual mind bugs. A visual illusion is one that produces an error in the mind's ability to perceive a pair of objects as they actually are. We call such errors mind bugs, ingrained habits of thought that lead to errors in how we perceive, remember, reason, and make decisions. Shades of truth. We are interested here in untruths that are somewhere on the spectrum between totally unconscious and partially conscious. Untruths that people tell not only to others, but at times to themselves as well. You may be only dimly aware of forces that work to shade your answers away from the truth. Those forces reflect a diverse set of motivations, including a desire to be accurate and truthful. We aim here to help you become aware not only of the extent of your unrecognized untruths, but also of their causes. How the IAT, the Implicit Association Test, works. When categories can be linked to each other via shared goodness or badness, the shared property is what psychologists call valence, or emotional value. Positive valence attracts and negative valence repels. Positive valence can function as mental glue that bonds these two categories into one. The mental glue that can allow two categories to combine into one corresponds to an ancient concept of psychology, mental association. Two facts of mind, reflective and automatic. Our preferences can take different forms. For the purpose of building theories and conducting research, psychologists routinely speak about two systems that characterize the mind, reflective and automatic. We know our reflective preferences quite well, especially when they concern matters important to us. The automatic side of our mind is a quite different entity. It's a stranger to us. We implicitly know something or feel a certain way, and often, these thoughts and feelings are reflected on our actions too. The difference being that we can't always explain these actions, and they are at times completely at odds with our conscious intentions. Dissociation, a crack in the system. Dissociation is the occurrence, in one and the same mind, of mutually inconsistent ideas that remain isolated from one another. More specifically, the mutually inconsistent ideas we are interested in are those that are the product of our reflective or rational mind, on one hand, and our automatic intuitive mind, on the other hand. It is this barrier between conscious and unconscious, reflective and automatic, that the IAT was designed to reveal, and it has upheld its end of the bargain effectively. Cognitive dissonance and the choice to know. The theory of cognitive dissonance tells us that becoming aware of conflicts between our beliefs and our actions, or between two simultaneously coexisting beliefs, violates the natural human striving for mental harmony, or consonance. The uncomfortable mental state associated with this violation is as disturbing in its own way as the auditory dissonance produced by musical sounds that are not in harmony. Reflecting on the automatic. Although our focus has been on the power of the unconscious mind, we do not mean to suggest that such thoughts cannot be overruled. When it comes to seeking change, the reflective, conscious side of the brain is more than capable of doing the necessary work. Its power derives from its ability to observe itself and to use those observations to guide conscious action. Knowledge is indeed power, and self-knowledge achieved by taking the IAT can exert its power by unsettling existing views of one's mind. If that happens, the melancholy produced by the IAT will indeed be useful. Stereotypes are usually not favorable. The great majority of stereotypes contain at least a few characteristics that you would not attribute to anyone you like or respect. Because all stereotypes are partly true and partly false, it may seem pointless to debate their accuracy. Nevertheless, we can say that some stereotypes are more valid than others. Group stereotypes typically consist of traits that are noticeably more negative than those we would attribute to our friends. Does stereotyping have a useful purpose? The categories that our brains form so easily give rise to stereotypes. Thus, we associate certain categories with certain prejudged attributes: Africans with having rhythm, Asian with being good at math, women with being inattentive drivers, and so forth. There is a theory of the presently adaptive type that supposes that many people derive a useful self-esteem boost because stereotypes allow them to see their own group as superior to other groups. Having unfavorable stereotypes of many other groups makes this fairly easy to do, but this theory is less than compelling, in part because humans have so many other ways to boost self-esteem, and in part because it leads to an expectation that is most likely untrue. We offer here a new and admittedly speculative theory of the benefits of stereotyping that is also of the presently adaptive variety. Stereotyping achieves the desirable effects of allowing us to rapidly perceive total strangers as distinctive individuals. Who uses stereotypes? Who gets stereotyped? It is not possible to be human and to avoid making use of stereotype. Stereotypes make up a submerged but significant portion of the meaning that we read into words such as old, female, Asian, and Muslim. These submerged, automatically activated meanings go well beyond dictionary definitions. The answer to who gets stereotyped is less simple. Stereotypes are not distributed equally. If you can be described by the default attributes of your society, the attributes that don't need to be mentioned because they are assumed unless explicitly stated otherwise, you will be subject to less stereotyping than others. You won't be stereotyped by the members of your in-group, those who share the default characteristics that you have, and you may be stereotyped little by others. Those who belong to their society's default categories may see stereotyping as less of a problem than others do. They're much less likely to be its victims. The stereotypes applied to a group are sometimes self-applied by members of the group to themselves, and in that case, the stereotypes may act as a self-undermining and self-fulfilling prophecies. But when stereotypes are unfavorable, as many are, the forces that cause people to act in ways that conform to the stereotype applied to their own group can have damaging effects. Can mind bugs be exterminated? Instead of trying to outsmart mind bugs, why not deal with them the way computer programmers deal with computer program bugs? Just identify them and get rid of them. Unfortunately, effective methods for removing the mind bugs that contribute to hidden biases have yet to be convincingly established. Among the attractive aspects of being in our science at this time is the opportunity to have one's mind routinely changed by research evidence. Our initial belief that it might take long periods of hard work to change existing associations needs revision. The data were showing that hidden bias mind bugs could be weakened by relatively minimal interventions that were used in these laboratory studies would provide a means of eradicating mind bugs. At least for the time being, it appears necessary to find workarounds for mind bugs. So we back to the strategy of trying to outsmart the machine. Hidden biases of good people. Understanding in-group favoritism. Social psychologists Samuel and Jack DeVito have focused a sustained research program on a subset of Americans whom they described as aversive racists. These are white Americans who earnestly describe themselves as egalitarian, but nevertheless display subtle forms of race discrimination, such as by being more ready to offer help to whites than blacks. The aversive piece of the aversive racism label captures Gartner and DeVito's assumption that, for these white egalitarians, interracial interactions often provoke anxiety and discomfort, which can prompt avoidance or withdrawal, rather than interracial engagement. We have some observations about the uncomfortable egalitarians. First, there are a lot of them, and we are entirely serious in including ourselves among them. Our present best estimate is that they comprise 40% or more of white Americans and Asian Americans, perhaps a bit smaller fraction of Latino Americans, and a substantially smaller, but not at all negligible portion of African Americans. Second, their differential behavior toward white and black Americans can well be responsible for a substantial portion of the disadvantage experienced by black Americans. The third and perhaps the most needing explanation is that uncomfortable egalitarians are extremely unlikely to notice that their differential behavior toward white and black contributes in any way to the disadvantages experienced by black Americans. However, the connection is actually close and provides insight into why uncomfortable egalitarians have no awareness that they are doing anything discriminatory. Uncomfortable egalitarians may be the prototypical good people who have hidden biases. They see themselves as helpful, but it turns out that their helpfulness is selective, caused in part by their discomfort in interracial interactions. Their discriminatory behavior consists of being selectively ready or able to help only or mostly those who are like them, those in their circle of friends and acquaintances. In other words, those in the groups for which they have automatic preferences. Readers may wonder why we label the differentially directed helping of uncomfortable egalitarians as discrimination. How can we justify calling the act of helping an in-group member an act of discrimination? The answer requires distinguishing among a few different types of in-groups. Now put yourself in the role of a hiring manager who gives the job to someone who is a college classmate or a friend. In doing this, you will likely reject other applicants, possibly including that of a more qualified person whom you don't know personally and who may be of a different nationality, religion, race, or ethnicity. Legally, that's discrimination. This divides the world into those who have connections by virtue of money, social class, profession, or some other elite identification that is unequally distributed, and those who don't. In using those connections, one's good actions can have the side effect of increasing the relative advantages of those who are already advantaged. The transforming effect that our research has had on our own understanding of discrimination has gradually brought us to the point of believing that selective helping of the type we are now describing, helping that is nicely captured by a familiar term, in-group favoritism, may be the largest contributing factor to the relative disadvantages experienced by Black Americans and other already disadvantaged groups. Yes, some people do actively intend harm to members of these groups, and their harmful actions do indeed contribute substantially to these groups' disadvantages. But we also know that these overtly prejudiced people are only a minority of Americans, quite likely a small minority. Can self-undermined mind bugs be undone? Most women do not endorse the stereotype that men are naturally better at having careers, or that they have superior abilities in science, mathematics, or music. Because women do not endorse these stereotypes, the gender career IAT has been an eye-opener for many women. Upon trying it, they may discover that they have automatic associations of exactly this type. Strong female equals family, and male equals career associations. There is no reason to doubt that the mind bugs we direct towards ourselves are every bit as durable as those we direct towards others. As it happens, the mind bugs we have been writing about, when they are stereotypes of our own groups, do cause us to see ourselves as others see us, even if this seeing happens without our being aware of it. At present, the strategies available to avoid unintended discrimination resulting from hidden biases are less easily described than are the methods for avoiding collisions with vehicles that enter side view mirrors' blind spots. But there are a few good weapons against hidden biases. The blinding method that worked to dramatically increase women's success in symphony orchestra auditions is a known successful strategy that remains underused in many circumstances in which it can work. Another underutilized strategy is the no-brainer solution of developing evidence-based guidelines to eliminate discretion from judgment that might otherwise afford opportunity from hidden bias, mind bugs to operate. When faithfully applied, intelligently developed guidelines will leave little room for hidden biases. We expect the next several years to produce a steady accumulation of research on methods to eradicate or outsmart mind bugs. Among the situations for which effective mind bug outsmarting strategies do not yet exist, most troublesome are the many routine, daily social interactions in which automatic in-group preferences unintentionally put out-group members at a disadvantage. The good people of this book's title likely include many who want to identify the situations in which hidden bias mind bugs operate to be prepared to outsmart them. It may require some thought.